allergy season has finally hit. And I forgot my Claritin, as I'm sure many of us are feeling that a little bit today. Stand up, take up your mat and walk. Wade in the water, children, wade in the water. God's gonna trouble the water. Our gospel takes place in Jerusalem at the pools of Bethsaida. The pools established around 800 BC were created to collect rainwater, largely used for ritual purposes at the temple in Jerusalem that was close by. The pool was surrounded by porticos that provided shade and shelter for those waiting near the pool for healing. Legend has it that an angel would stir the waters of the pool, and the very first person who got into the pool would be healed. So at the slightest movement of the water, those who were ill scrambled to be the first one in the water. This is the gospel text behind that spiritual wade in the water. Jesus comes upon a man who has been waiting by this pool for 38 years and asks him, "Do you want to be made well?" We hear the man beginning to complain about his situation. "Every time the water stirred, I can't get to the pool. Others beat me to it. No thanks, I think I'll just sit here on my mat and wait for the waters to ripple. I've been here for 38 years and I know what to expect, and I know all the other people nearby. True, I'm probably not going to get better either, but you know, I've gotten kind of used to it here, so thanks all the same, Jesus, but I will just lie here." Does that phrase sound familiar to any of us? I believe it is the same for many of us. God's invitation for transformation is ever present in our lives. God's invitation for healing and wholeness is before us. But more often than not, we say, "I'm used to the way things are. I know what to expect. I don't want to change my ideas, my thoughts, my way of doing things. Leave me alone, Jesus. Don't trouble the waters of my life." Even though my life feels broken and I'm not satisfied, at least I know what's going to happen. At least I know what to expect with the way things are right now. So I'll just continue to sit here on my mat and wait. But Jesus does something different with this man. He tells him, "You don't need to wait for the water to ripple. You don't need to wait here on your mat." He orders him, "Stand up. Take up your mat and walk." The man is made well. He picks up his mat and begins to walk. What's important here is that when confronted with the power of Jesus, he stops for a moment, stops being the victim on the mat, and responds to this command and chooses something else that's different, that transforms him and makes him whole. When we cease being a victim, "I can't get to the water, Jesus. There's always someone else ahead of me first," and start being more responsible, then we find sometimes our legs are strong enough for us to walk beside others who are in pain and need help. We can become true agents of reconciliation and healing. Our arms are empowered to embrace our enemies and the outcasts. Our hearts become strong enough to face into our losses and pain. We no longer make excuses. Instead, we walk forward to new life in Jesus Christ and go to work, serving, healing, hoping, and living a life of joy and fullness. We know that to get up and follow Jesus will involve us in people's lives in ways that we're not sure we quite want to go. Because to be whole means to be remembered, reconnected with God, with others, and God's creation. No more isolation. No more living my private life where no one bothers or challenges me. It also requires listening for God's voice when it comes. And sometimes it comes like a bolt of lightning and can surprise us. I had such an experience just this past week during my prayer time with Ark one morning. An invitation that felt more like a command from the Holy Spirit has moved me and stirred the waters, and now I feel compelled to explore its call. I'll begin briefly with the backstory of another such call that's linked to this one in 2005. When I was in my first year of seminary at Episcopal Divinity School, there was a bishop from Africa who was there for a semester as a resident scholar. He came with his lovely wife, Kamala. Their rooms in the seminary were directly below mine. One day, Bishop Ernest was preaching on the call of Matthew in the gospel. Now, as the story goes, Jesus calls Matthew and then has dinner at his house. The Pharisees and the folks in power complain to him about eating with Matthew, who happened to be a tax collector and therefore under the employment of the occupying Romans. He was considered a sinner, and basically Jesus shouldn't hang out with that kind of person. I was listening to the sermon that the bishop delivered with some passion, and the Holy Spirit zapped me right there and then. So after the service, I went up to the bishop and asked to come to talk with him and his wife. A few days later, I found myself down at their rooms, and I simply said to him, "I am Matthew. Will you come to Art and my house for a weekend?" Having not known couples like ours, they took a risk, and they said yes and came. And this began a friendship that grew and grew and deepened. They considered our house their home when they were here in the United States. And the friendship grew to such a point that the following year, the bishop made a special trip from Africa to Connecticut just to baptize my son Joshua. However, after the divisions among the churches at that time in the Anglican Communion and the wrangling over the consecration of Bishop Gene Robinson of New Hampshire as the world's first gay bishop, Bishop Ernest found himself in a difficult situation. While there was affection for me and my family, he was pressured to take a stand against the U.S. Episcopal Church and formally broke communion between our church and his church of the South Indian Ocean because of ordinations of folks exactly like me. He was now an archbishop over seven countries and also elected by his fellow bishops in Africa as the head bishop of all the Anglican churches in Africa. So he had to pull back. He broke contact with us. However, through all those years, I never stopped reaching out to him and his wife, Kamala. Last week, I was given that kind of message in my prayer time. This time, I was told to do something I would rather not do. I've been called to go to Africa and rekindle my friendship with the bishop and his wife. There's a much, much longer version to the story, and I shared some of that with the vestry I won't get into. But in communications just this week, the bishop is open to reconnecting and healing the divisions between our two national churches half a world away. I was told to use this special relationship as an instrument of healing and to build understanding. And I know I will be meeting actually with the bishop and his wife in Rome later this October to begin to put a plan together. I don't know where this path is taking me, and I have to be honest, I'm a bit apprehensive and a little scared of possible wading into some hostile territory. But I'm open to whatever the Spirit is up to, and I'm trusting in God's grace to carry us both into this new time and place. To behold means to get off the couch and get involved, to listen to those promptings of the Spirit. It means also working our tails off and often doing things behind the scene that no one else sees, that is tedious and overlooked. We also know to walk out the door and say, "Here I am, Jesus, send me," is an invitation to possible crucifixion. As the anti-war social justice activist and Roman Catholic priest, former priest, Daniel Berrigan once said, "If you're going to follow Jesus, really follow Jesus, you had better look good on wood, because that's where you're going to end up." We all know of that as a real possibility. So maybe staying on our couches and our mats don't look so bad after all. In our gospel, this man has the guts to make a change, to be whole. He takes a deep breath and nods to Jesus. "Yes, I want to be whole, healed, and well. I know it will take risking, Jesus. I know it will take work and lots of unlearning of old pain-filled habits accumulated over 38 years and learning and replacing those with new habits. I know it's not going to be easy, but yes, Jesus, yes, make me whole again." And Jesus heals him. No questions asked, no stipulations, no checking to see if he truly deserves it or not, no judging him for what he believes or what he doesn't believe. Jesus just heals him. Grace. And the man picks up his mat and walks out the door to a brand new life, to wholeness. My friends, one thing is certain. In our lives, God's going to trouble the waters. Our question today is, will we have the courage to stand up, take our mat, and walk?